is Sportsfeld episode 200. Talk about sneaking up on you, Jake. Episode friggin' 200. Can you believe it?
I can, because I pay attention to the episode numbers and knew that this was going to be 200 without even having to be told at all.
You could have just said, pay attention to the episode, full stop, and people would know you were.
I pay attention to the episodes. I just don't listen to them.
Holy cow. Episode 100 felt a world ago. I'm trying to think when roughly was episode
100. Truly knowing 100. Us, it could be anywhere from like 2015 to 2019.
Well, no. Remember we threw a big...
Oh, yeah.
Episode 100 was a big party.
That was for episode 100. Jesus.
Isn't it?
I think you're right.
So listen, it's got to be two-ish years because we haven't skipped a damn beat.
June 2019.
Wow. June 2019, pretty exciting. Obviously, yeah, there it is. We made it to 100. We did a walk down memory lane. We did a friend mailbag. We relived 2014 and 2016. We did a bunch of stuff, sort of made up for lost time, and then looked back at our, looked back at our history and the things we had done. And then this time, the last 100 episodes, it's just been pure instant reaction.
High octane sports content.
A lot has happened since episode 100. The Raptors won the NBA title. Right after, Don Cherry got fired. we were named one of Toronto's best podcasts.
One year reigning Toronto best podcast.
We tried to throw a live show, and that got ruined.
Well,
we tried.
We tried, and then it didn't happen.
And we had the March 11th COVID-19 episode. So COVID-19. The last time you and I were in a studio looking across from us, each other, and doing a show live was episode 135.
Wow. So it's been 65.
65. 65 quarantine episodes. That's wild. That's more than a year.
That is wild.
I mean, obviously.
And we'll never go back to a studio again, probably, because this is much easier.
It is much easier, and I live much further away. But... Pretty incredible to be at 200 episodes. Nothing special planned this time other than the fact that we are, I'll say this, in terms of our lives, you are probably not going to have three straight days of transactions across sport bigger than we are about to do. We have the NHL free agency today, which, listen, it's a bunch of names that I don't recognize, going to teams that I don't cheer for. NBA draft is Thursday, which is the day this will come out. And then MLB trade deadline is Friday. 3 days, three major transaction milestones across three different sports. Toronto teams, our guys, pretty firmly in the middle of most of them. I know the Maple Leafs, obviously not... as Kyle Dubas was eloquently saying, not in big game hunting mode, but they did make some small moves. I couldn't tell you what they are off the top of my head because they're nothing big enough to have. You know, basically, I'll say this. Nobody I have heard of other than Josh Hosang, who is on a PTO. How about that? Make a new backup goalie.
I mean, what the Leafs do is important because the only things that matter in hockey is what the Maple Leafs do. So that's true. They are at the center of it, regardless.
But this is a bunch of guys being signed for under $1 million plus a backup goalie, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, I know Bunting.
Peter Mrazek, Michael Bunting, David Kampf, not a clue. Curtis Gabriel, Alex Biega, who I feel like played for the Canucks. I have the Sportsnet Canucks guy's voice in my head when I say Alex Biega.
What I'll say is, I think people who...
went to Harvard, how about that?
Hey, people who still listen to us know better than to expect us to know anything about NHL free agency, I think. If you're coming here looking for in-depth hockey analysis of free agency, you've never listened to the show before.
Michael Amadio, Carl Dahlstrom, who is a defenseman, and again, Josh Hosang, who is somebody that I've heard of.
Yeah, he's the only name I know. And Peter Mrazek.
Yes. Josh Hosang, who famously has been not really given a chance. A guy that everyone said all the skill in the world. And then because his last name is Hosang, is obviously not being given a true chance. As we see, you know, a sexual predator drafted in the first round by the Canadiens. Tony D'Angelo, an absolute like nut job, who got punched in the face by his own teammates, signed by the Carolina Hurricanes. So hockey is at it again, and you have
to don't worry. Jake Virtanen's going to sign soon too.
That's right. You almost lose track. I mean, listen, I don't give any of those fucking guys much of my attention, or do I want to waste much of my breath on them just to be disappointed? Obviously, continuing to fly in the face of the hockey is for everyone talking points that are so fun to do, and the we have to get uncomfortable sort of thing that everyone loves to do. None of that. none of that. Thanks. But yeah, no, that is that's your hockey roundup. Dougie Hamilton got signed by, I want to say, New Jersey.
A lot of money for Dougie Hamilton.
We know.
Yeah.
Chicago.
We know as much as our Twitter feeds tell us.
Yeah, speaking of, and I'll say this, Jake, I don't know a lot about the league, but I will say that it seems to me pretty easy to analyze NHL signings, because you just look at a contract. If the contract was more than 2 years, you say the back end of this is probably going to be a little scary. That's what you say. No matter who signs, no matter where. Say, like, oh, a little bit too much term for my liking, is what you're supposed to say.
Of course. It's too much team control.
Yes, exactly right. Speaking of team control, we also have the NBA draft is tomorrow. The Raptors remain in number four. I have listened to a ton of rumors. I have listened to a ton of podcasts. I have read Blake's mock board. Listen, anything can happen, unfortunately. I would love to give it thorough analysis. I still think it should be Jalen Suggs, because he seems to be a guy who can come in and immediately help, and it has winner written all over him. There was a guy, you know, everyone would like Evan Mobley, but it seems like he's probably going first or second. If Mobley falls, that's great. Also into, you know, interesting trade thoughts is always fun, but for the most part, I am set on it being either Jalen Suggs or possibly, I'll say Jake, possibly they trade down. Maybe they like somebody that is in the 4-7 range, and they trade down two picks and get extra stuff. I have no idea.
I would like them to trade down exactly two picks.
To six.
And I don't care what they get in return in the draft, but I do care that they get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in return for the fourth overall pick.
Do you think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the OKC says that's worth two pick slots for us? Probably not.
Most teams I'd say no, but we know that OKC loves their picks.
Right. That is true.
Sam Presti loves loading up on picks.
That is true.
I think they'd probably have to throw in something else. I think you'd have to do like something like the fourth and Chris Boucher, maybe.
Mm.
Which is a lot. But also, if you have the chance to go get Shai, like, he's young enough to me that trading for him or drafting a player, it's not like you're trading the fourth overall pick for a guy who's 29.
Right. Like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a proven young stud immediately.
And we love him. He's
And we love him.
Yeah. Scotty Barnes, Jonathan Kuminga, other guys sort of in that area. Scotty Barnes, who has a bit of a Raptory profile in that he is probably one of, if not the best defender in the class, big and thick, and can't really shoot at all. Maybe too many of those guys in the Raptors right now, but also Jonathan Kuminga, sort of a similar build, a guy that can defend with the best of them, but maybe not quite the offensive upside, as you know, we sort of know this team can be very good defensively. They weren't really last year, but I would like to have some scoring out of here, and that is why
yeah. I enjoyed the quote from Bobby today where he was like, we've narrowed our picks down to three or four guys. It's like, yeah, you're picking fourth, man.
Hey, you're picking fourth. How many?
There's four good players in the draft.
Anyway, it'll be interesting. I haven't, obviously, we haven't had to really care about draft picks in.
It's been like a decade.
Very long. I can't remember.
I guess Pirtle.
I guess the Pirtle year.
Pirtle is Pascal. Sort of
the last time that I. Even Pascal was like pretty late, wasn't it?
Yeah, 27th, I think.
So like by and that like, point.
OG was like, I want to say 14th.
That makes sense. That's definitely in the ballpark. So, and listen, by that point, for those two picks, we were already settled fully into like, I'm not even going to look it up because Masai's got it covered.
Yeah. Right. And it was also like, the team was like decent to good at that point. So it was just whatever they can turn and spin into gold is great.
Very, very interesting. I love getting back into the draft. The Raptors, are expecting to immediately turn around and be good again. And OG, 23rd, Pascal, 27th, DeLon Wright, 20th, Bruno Caboclo in 2014 was 20th overall, and Terrence Ross. I'll go back to 2012 was pretty much the last time I had any knowledge of what was going on leading into the draft, and that was the Terrence Ross deal.
Did they have a pick in 2013?
They did not. No picks in 2013 or 2018.
That makes sense then, because then Terrence Ross was the last draft pick before they became a perennial playoff team.
That is correct. Yeah, and then you get Bruno in 2014. Again, DeLon Wright at 20 in 2015. Pirtle in 2016, which it was a top 10 pick, but I would say that I wasn't extremely focused on that draft because they were a good team as we and in 2015. Listen, there was a lot going on in our lives in 2015.
Yeah, and I do think that to your point, it's fun. It's way more fun to follow and care about the draft when there's this like top five guys. When it's like, oh, I'm sure whoever we pick at 25 will turn out to be good someday.
Yes, as much fun as it is to have the Malachi Flynn, and then we laugh about them getting good value at 29. Much more fun to just take a great player.
Yeah, agreed.
And there's Kyle Lowry landing spots. His conversation, we'll see. Jonas Valanciunas got traded. How about that?
He did, to a possible Kyle Lowry landing spot.
Very interesting. If you had your say, let's say hypothetically they're saying Kyle Lowry's not going to come back, and you are going to decide where Kyle Lowry would like to go, and they sort of like, Jake, where would you like to see, if not Toronto, where would you want Kyle Lowry to play next year?
I feel like it has to be a team that I don't hate. New Orleans, I actually love for Kyle. Kyle, Zion, and Jonas in a starting five is, I'll watch that all day.
Yeah, Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
I'd watch that team a lot. I would love, I think I just don't want Kyle to go to, I think I'm fine with wherever he goes, as long as it's not, I definitely don't want him to go to the Clippers.
No.
I'd be fine with him going to the Lakers, I think.
If he, Lakers for me is contingent on, and listen, it would take absolute magic with the contracts, but for me, if it was him and DeMar reunited in the Lakers, I would be okay with that.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that too. As long as he stay out of the East and don't go to the Clippers, and I'm happy, I think.
Yeah. I also, listen, I know it's home. I sort of don't want him to go to the Sixers.
I absolutely don't want him to go to the Sixers. That's what I meant by stay out of the East without saying it.
Yeah. As much as it is, and listen, no Clippers, no Clippers, no Sixers, no Heat, but also wherever he wants to go.
Yeah, but also no Clippers, no Sixers, no Heat.
Checked in on this last week before it started, and predictably I have, almost to a word that I said, have watched a little bit every day. Are you tuned in to the Olympic Games, Jake?
No. And that is not for any like moralistic stance reason. I just genuinely, I think because of the lack of fans, because of sort of so much else going on and the timing of them this year, because they were delayed, because it's in Japan, I genuinely just keep forgetting they're happening.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'll see the updates, and I watched the women's soccer game yesterday against Great Britain, but yeah, I just keep sort of forgetting their thing.
We've been watching Canada in the pool. The women's swimmers, who we are producing at an alarming clip, mostly just the pool. A little bit of volleyball, but not as much as I do. I keep missing the USA basketball games, and they keep losing, which is like, okay.
yeah, getting a push alert that they won was kind of weird.
They beat Iran, Iraq.
I don't know. I didn't read it. I saw.
You really, truly sticking to your word. I appreciate that. Yeah, listen, I'll say this before we move on from the Olympics. Obviously, the Simone Biles thing has been the big story. And I think, obviously, anybody listening to this knows where we land on this.
I would hope so.
But I'll say this, Jake. We do this every so often. People that I listen, and I know the needless nature of me saying this and the absolute lack of impact it will have. To those that I follow on Twitter that listen to this show, you really, truly do not need to dunk on like Charlie Kirk and Piers Morgan. Like you just don't. Like I know they're gonna have bad takes. I don't need to also see it.
I have one exception to that.
Sure.
What's the opposite of a friend of the show? Enemy? Show of the friend? No, like in a good way. Richard Kind dunking on Charlie Kirk is fine.
Sure.
I would say.
Yeah.
But other than that, I agree with you. I think this whole... the idea... I don't know. I'm of two minds of this. On one hand, I do think that people like that should be shouted down as much as possible, but I also understand that it's Twitter, and that's... and you're not shouting them down, you're actually amplifying it.
Yes.
And so while I understand the desire to be like, you dumb fuck, like, go away, I agree with you. Like, I don't need to see what Charlie Kirk said in my
You can
feed.
Reply to it. Just don't fucking quote tweet it.
Yeah.
I don't fucking care what Charlie Kirk... I know they're bad takes. There's no planet was I ever like, I wonder if they're going to turn face here.
What does Charlie Kirk think about this?
Perhaps he'll surprise me with a like, absolutely not. And, you know... these people, their entire lives is peddling in these opinions to do this exact thing. And the danger in it, to close this off without being too sanctimonious, the danger in it is like in your attempt to dunk, somebody that follows you that doesn't ever say anything goes, well, I actually sort of agree with this now that I see it, right?
Mm.
That's the danger in the amplified dunk attempt. And the reality is most of the dunks on these people are not very good.
Yes.
Like the dunks, it's always like, you're a loser, which is like, yeah, sure, take your 40 likes and move on with
and
your
honestly,
day.
And honestly, even if the dunk is good, it's just
it's
like
not worth it. It's garbage.
Yeah. Anyway. It's the, I don't know. I agree with you, but I'm not sure what my
just reply and just say, hey, you're a fucking idiot. Just the anyway. Again, I don't want to spend too much time on it and get too sanctimonious. We have been listen. It's I like the Olympics for the amplification of women's sports. You sort of it doesn't divide them like we do with other ones, where I think somebody was sharing, I think women's sports get 4% of the coverage compared to other sports year round, except for the Olympics, where it's like the one place where we all tune in to watch Penny swim, or we all tune in to watch weightlifters, or whatever you want to say that it is. I think that is something that the Olympics has always had done a really good job of, and continues as Canada's women continue to win a bunch of medals.
I didn't know that the coverage was... I obviously knew it was skewed, but I didn't realize it was that skewed.
Yeah, I mean, other than the WNBA and occasional LPGA, like somebody recognizable like Brooke Henderson or Michelle Wee wins, you really don't hear a lot about women's sports in the general scheme of things.
Yeah, I think women's soccer is starting to pick up a bit. Like the women's, I'm not sure what I'm saying that's picking up. I don't even know the actual name of the league, but the women's EPL basically is starting to pick up steam, and it's great. I watched a bunch last year because Spurs signed some people, and it's the thing that I like about the women's EPL actually is, for me with like the WNBA, I like watching, you know, Sabrina and the stars. But without a Toronto team, it's hard for me to get invested. But like, the women's EPL is great because it's all the same teams. So automatically, it's just like, oh, I cheer for Lady Spurs. Perfect.
Yeah. Very smart. Very good point. And there was a, I can't remember what it was. There was a, league in, I can't remember which team, which league it was, but the men's teams wore half badges on their shirts, to basically demonstrate that if you are only cheering for the men's team, you are only cheering for half of your club's team.
Interesting.
It was in Colombia, women's football. Basically, they nearly had to cancel the season because nobody was coming to the games. So all the Colombian teams, Boca Juniors, for example, would remove half of their badge. Boca Juniors actually started it. And fans are like, why the hell is there only half a badge? And then when they explained it, the rest of the league got on board and they had absolute record attendance, record everything. They called them being half fans and being 100% fan. Yeah, plus 633% attendance after doing this at the women's game.
Wow.
It's a really cool idea, and I really like what you said there about working the WNBA into it. Listen, that league is starting to take off on its own merit anyway, but I think those partnerships are really valuable and just sort of provides an example of how literally just giving it a chance is the way to see some growth and expansion there. Anyway, that brings us to, you knew we were going to get to them eventually, the Toronto Blue Jays. We are going to talk about their deadline coming up on Friday and what to expect and where we sit because they lost games, but then they won. So which one are we going to focus on? We'll find out after this. Listen, I'll admit it, was a bit of a, not rock bottom, because I think I've already hit rock bottom three or four times.
It's that kind of year.
It is that kind of year. Amen. When they lost to Boston on Monday, I was of the opinion, I'm going to treat myself to a bit of a meltdown and see how negative I can get here. Every so often, I will let myself get, I'll have one night, I was like, for the rest of the night, I'm going to be as negative as I possibly feel. And I was fairly certain they were going to get swept and head into the trade deadline under 500. That was my guess as to what was about to happen because they just couldn't seem to beat the Boston Red Sox, blowing leads, never having leads, however you want to do it. The Jays just seem cursed to not beat the Red Sox. They won the first half of today's doubleheader. The second game is starting as we record this. But first and foremost, seven-inning games. The Blue Jays are amazing at seven-inning games. I'm totally into that. But, you know, some of the discourse this week has picked up around the fact that late and close in games, not only has the bullpen faltered them, but they have been much, 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 much worse of a hitting team in innings 7 through 9. We all know the story that when they are up big, they absolutely pile on the runs like no problem. But when they are in late close games, they hit something like 50% as well as they normally do. Which for a team that normally hits pretty darn well is a dramatic drop in production. First of all, Jake, how worried are you about numbers like that?
Getting more and more each day,
I
would say. I think, you know, we talk a lot about this when we talk about Marcus Semien or the other side of things, Randall Grichuk. And it's not fair for us to say, well, he's been doing X for this long, therefore it must be real. And then when there's something negative about hitting, not have that same attitude. I think you know, they're a swing happy team. And that's their approach at the plate. They're all very aggressive at the plate. And when you're facing guys who are ace relievers, whose only job is to pitch one inning and get you out and throw as hard as they can, that approach doesn't always work as well as it does against a starter, especially some like middling starters that they've faced, because there aren't that many like great starters in the league. So I think it makes total sense. I think it's a very easy correlation to see. And I think also they are a very young team, and like I don't put a lot of weight into like in air quotes clutchness, but I do think that there's a pressure aspect, especially against teams they're chasing. And like, you can tell when they're playing a team like Boston, how the team, the guys themselves are just like, it's like they're living and dying with every pitch, it seems, which is great to watch and great to see. But it's also, I can see how it can tie them up a bit. That's also like Jay's talkie, so I don't know if it's true, but I am less concerned with the 7-9, and I'm more concerned with the fact that they just don't seem to be able to beat anybody good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, give us the Rangers and we'll put up 15 a game, but any team that's above 500 in the playoffs, it is not a pretty sight.
It's concerning. It's definitely concerning, because it not only does it apply to Tampa and the Red Sox, they also didn't manage to take advantage of Seattle, who is a pretty paper team. Yeah, those two things are the big sort of glaring issues that stare them in the face every time they get into a series against one of these teams. And, you know, I'll say this, the more than one person on Monday, as I was mid-meltdown, made reference to the 2013 Blue Jays, who had made all the big moves. They had added Jose Reyes, they had added Josh Johnson, they had added all these different things, and started out like 10-22 or something like that. Interesting sort of comparison of expectation versus results. I don't know if I feel, listen, I was like, remember up until Reyes broke his ankle, it was like, they're going to turn this around. They're going to figure this out. And they just sort of never did. The 2013 team went 74-88. I don't think that is quite a callery to what we're looking to. They are playing basically the same level of baseball as the 2014 team, which obviously we all know what happened there, led them into the 2015 major run. But yeah, they're in an interesting spot. I feel like we come on here every single week and I say I just want them to go on a run, but I think the way that they're built right now is making it very difficult for them to do that. Robbie Ray continues to be very good. You're reliably getting 5, 6, 7 innings from Hyunjin Ryu, but Steven Matz has not been it. Ross Stripling continues to really not really know what you're getting each way, and we're still waiting for Alek Manoah to get healthy after falling down the stairs and hurting his back. There's a little uncertainty in that rotation now, which I would say, and I think Ben Nicholson-Smith mentioned it, that they sort of do have the shortest rotation of any of the teams that they are going to be competing with. Not that the other teams have amazing rotations, but the Jays, beyond Ray, really, with how much Ryu has struggled, don't have a lot of sure things in that 1-5.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's kind of where I wanted to go with this. Obviously, and somewhat justifiably, all of the, let's call it the smoke, is about the struggling bullpen, which is valid. The bullpen is very, very bad. And I've said on here before that I think the front office did this team a disservice by hoping that guys like Kirby Yates and, you know, Chatwood and Merriweather would be able to put it together and they'd be fine this year for once. And I do give them some credit for adding guys like, you know, Simber's been very good. Trevor Richards has been good. Taylor Sosado's been very good, which, sure, I'm glad they called up Kirby Snead. I'd like to see him pitch maybe today. But the thing that I keep coming back to that I was reminded of by a friend of ours the other day that I had actually forgotten about was the Blue Jays went into this season with Tanner Roark as a member of the rotation. He was expectedly very bad.
Yes, he was.
He was DFA'd within like 10 days of the season, a move that we all rightly praise. But then they just never really replaced him. Like, to your point about the thin rotation, the rotation is so thin that it does kind of make me go back to what we have debated many times in the last 4 or 5 months. Of like, what does this front office think this team is? Like, I think they've gotten, obviously, and like, the way I would put it is, obviously, Robbie Ray has been unbelievably good. But what if he was just Robbie Ray this year?
Right.
And then we're having this conversation of a rotation of literally just Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah, I mean, you could, if you wanted to, you could say they slotted Manoa into that slot, who obviously has been pretty darn good. But yeah, the point's taken. They didn't replace him with a legitimate major league proven guy.
Yeah, and it just seems like there's a lot of tiptoeing, let's call it, about how to definitively replace things. And I get that to an extent. I also know that that's just how these guys operate, and I don't think that's always a bad thing. Especially, and like, they've obviously done some very good things this year with additions, like Mr. George Springer, who's starting to heat up and makes me happy every day. But I don't know. I feel like that we talk a lot about, oh, if they didn't have the bullpen injuries, like, everything would be fine. And, like, I don't know if that's true. And maybe this is my, I also sort of hit negativity bottom on Monday. And the thing that I just kept coming back to is maybe they're just not good enough. Mm. And they don't have, and my fear is that they lose Ray and Semien next year. Because they're not throwing big money at them, and replacing that is going to be very hard. I know they're big believers in, like, the system, and I know the farm system is very good, but also the farm system is very good. So go trade some of it to plug your holes and make a run, and you still have a good farm system.
To be fair, not that I explicitly disagree with any of this. To be fair, we haven't seen the market move on any real starting pitching yet.
That's true. That's very true.
But there isn't anybody that you're like, they missed out on him. Jason Stark mentioned that the Jays are in on Max Scherzer, which I think you have manifested.
No chance. There's no chance. I would love it. There's no chance. He's going west.
The odds of him going to anyone but the Dodgers.
Also, the Nationals now have a COVID outbreak, so
understandable.
Throws everything into question.
Yeah. If only there was a way that you could just, like, not, you know, get COVID.
Yeah, I know. It should be as easy as getting a shot. You know what I mean?
Unfortunately, well, I guess we'll never know. I do agree with you in that it does feel a little half finished, especially the pitching part, because the lineup is pretty close to as good as you could possibly want it. We'll get to, in a minute, yeah, about what they could do. There's not a lot of action on that front in general. I'm going to hold out a little bit of hope that we have some stuff coming in the next 2 days, but man, I would have liked to have Taiwan Walker retained, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, or like that, but that's, I think, what I mean. Like, it really feels like they went into the season being like, it'll be fine on all fronts on pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not how it works.
It's going to be interesting because I think you're right, and that there is also to leave space for, like, yeah, you know, they feel unfinished because they're not finished, right? We're still in the very early stages of what is a rebuild. We are in conservatively year two, maybe you could say year three if you're counting the half 2020. There's a lot of work to be done, and guys are still very early. It just, because of how incredible Vlad has been and how very good Bo looks, and you're getting this great stuff from Semien, and you spent all that money on Ryu and all that money on Springer, it does get you trigger happy to be like, all these guys are here right now, and all of them are providing, and all of them are doing what you want them to do. It's time to really make that push. Obviously, we got to our very lows, our very depths, we got to them, and the Jays looked not cooked, but they were, they're right, another 9.5 back before they play the second half of this series. They're 3.5 back of the wild, second wild card, which, again, it's just the Yankees and the Mariners and the Athletics ahead of them. So not even close to being out of it. Not by any stretch are they in a spot where you're like, well, they're not going to get it done. They should sell. But in the discussion of adding, Joey Gallo continues to be a guy we are hearing talked about. I think that, to me, a Joey Gallo or, you know, a Jose Ramirez, if you're going to add, it's got to be third base or somebody that gets you, to be frank, a little less Randall Grichuk, who is getting back to the Randall Grichuk that we wanted to not ever see again. And maybe a little less Gurriel. I think adding to that outfield depth and taking it from, like, a strength to in the conversation for, like, the best outfield the team has ever had, I think that's really important.
I think Joey Gallo is a great argument for what I'm saying. And I'm not just saying this because I really want them to trade for Joey Gallo, which I do. But you look at sort of like your point about the team being sort of half finished. And you look at guys like Grichuk and Gurriel, and you and again, you know what they're going to be because they're the same thing every year. And like the 6 through 8 in the order right now is very bad. You could even say 6 through 9 when Alejandro Kirk's not playing. They've been very, very bad. But you add Joey Gallo, who has another year of team control, and we know how much this front office loves team control. And all of a sudden, to your point, they have maybe the best outfield the team's ever seen. All of a sudden, 1 through 6 in the order is 6 all-stars. Then you have, if Kirk can be even, like, good, you have 2 holes in the lineup that, who cares? Like, you can fill that any day. And it's just, they're all here right now. And they're all hitting so well. Springer's heating up. Semien's giving you more than you ever hoped he could. Vlad is Vlad. Bo has been awesome lately. Teoscar is great. It just seems like, I'm not trying to make the argument that if they don't win the World Series this year, it's a failure of a season, because obviously I do not believe that to be the case. But to your point, they're 3.5 games out of a playoff spot with a half-finished team. And I think with Joey Gallo, you can finish like 30% of the team.
Yeah.
Or Jose Ramirez. Pick one.
Yeah. No, like, absolutely.
And just go get him. Go get Joey Gallo. I cannot stress this enough.
So that leads me to, before we move on, officially, Jake, you have nailed so many predictions. You have influenced the news cycle. You have you were right about Tanner Roark. We were right about I can't even remember his name anymore. Shaw something. Travis Shaw. When we talk again Friday evening and the deadline has passed, what do you expect the Blue Jays to have done?
Like a middling other bullpen guy for a low value prospect, and maybe a like Taijuan Walker-esque addition from last year, and that's about it.
No Joey Gallo.
No. There's no chance. That's not how these guys. It's just not how the front office operates. They're not big trade guys. They're not trade future value guys. They love control. I think it's been easy for us to forget that with big money signings that they've made, like George Springer, like Hyunjin Ryu. But like, they're still the same guys. They don't like doing that.
Joey Gallo. Extra year of control. He's around.
I know.
Year two.
I know. He's the perfect candidate for. He's the perfect compromise that makes everybody happy. But no, I expect to see another Simber Richards type added to the pen, not a Craig Kimbrell. And I expect to see a like 3-4 starter guy added. Maybe like a John Gray.
Oh boy, that's exciting. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm gonna boldly say that the Jays will do it. They will go and get Joey Gallo. I'll just say it so that
you
I can.
Think?
It fits so many things, and I think he can be had for a reasonable acquisition. And I think putting you know, whatever it may be, your 10th. And 8th best prospects or whatever the cost may be, if you can give them to any place and be like, they're probably not going to turn out. Number 1 would be Colorado, and number 2 would be the Texas Rangers. So I believe in it. I believe in it. I think left-handed bat, corner guy, good approach, tons of power, and has also been pretty cold since the All-Star break. Yeah, sign me up. Sign me up for Joey Gallo. And you're like you said, a John Gray level. Doesn't count, doesn't cost a whole lot. Usable, real MLB arm. And we'll see. We'll see if that's enough, because it very well could be, as I've said every week on this show. If they go on a run and just get ahead of 2 teams, all they have to do is sustain it against 2 teams that are not playing very good baseball.
The thing is, if there was ever a time, literally a time, like the this day scenario, to make an acquisition like Joey Gallo in the interest of making a run, it would be right now when you're about to return to Toronto.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And that's right. Friday, they will be in the Rogers Centre. I am very excited about that. Rogers Centre return and the trade deadline on the same day. It is candy. It's all candy for the Blue Jays. Hopefully they come back with a winning record and a playoff push. That would make me very happy because, boy, oh boy, something. I think that's a good part of it. I'm glad you bring it up right here at the end, that if they do make a splash, they're also making a splash in front of what will be a bunch of sold-out houses the rest of the way, and that's going to be, I don't know, pretty exciting. You don't want to end up, you don't want to be like the Mariners clubhouse yesterday that was like super pissed that they traded Kendall Graveman.
Yeah, that was, but again, that's who we're chasing. So
been there, done that as Jays fans. Right. Totally been there when you like the team's pretty good, they just need one thing and they end up selling. It sucks. So hopefully we can avoid that situation. We are going to take a break and come back with questions and recommendations and all that stuff after this. Jake, we return to the show, and it's my turn to ask you, as I often do, in your vast, vast library of musical knowledge, if you had to pick just one song to share with our listeners and give them a song, we'll call it of the week, what would your song of the week be this week?
Song this week is, you know, as long as this guy's putting out songs, it's going to be my song of the week every time, because it's always just a good time. It's Lil Nas X. An industry baby, maybe an artist that has the biggest gap in me actually enjoying his music, but and enjoying his personality, and one of the greatest self-marketers of our time, and one of the great take no shit guys of our time. I love it. I love everything about Lil Nas X, and I hope he keeps making all the right people angry and then keeps telling them to go fuck themselves, because he's so good at it and it's great.
Pretty hilarious for this to have come out of Old Town Road.
Right? It's amazing. The whole arc of it is great.
I'll say this. You cannot get into an automobile in 2021 without hearing Montero.
That's true. I hear it like even just like walking down the street.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good pick. Match of the week. This week, I never thought I would say this. Nick fucking Gage is on AEW Dynamite this week.
I saw your cameo.
Listen, I won't even profess to be somebody who knows a ton about Nick Gage. He is very deep underground. My co-host Josh is thrilled about this. He is a deathmatch wrestler. I'm not going to suggest anybody go out and find Nick Gage matches, because I cannot guarantee that what you will see will be something that you can stomach. He's the guy that almost killed David Arquette. If you remember that.
Okay, yeah.
Stabbed him in the jugular with a.
I do remember that, actually, pipe. Yes.
Yeah. He had a Dark Side of the Ring made about him, though. Because his story is truly incredible, has been at the bottom of poverty, was so down and out, he robbed a bank with no mask on at one point, spent time in prison, is quite a story. Somebody that, again, making a living in deathmatch wrestling in 2021 is not an easy thing to do, because the extremes have been pushed so extreme that you have to do truly outlandish things. He's going to be on national television tonight against Chris Jericho. I have no idea what to expect other than the unexpected, which is a great thing to say, and truly is the case with Nick Gage. Check out The Dark Side of the Ring. You might be a little squeamish, but a guy that has made his name with light tubes and thumbtacks and barbed wire and a lot of bloodshed and extreme amounts of violence. Very excited to see how he works on a national television stage. I don't expect him to be signed and to be a full-time guy, but in terms of one or two off special events sort of guys, he hits all the right nerves for a certain type of audience. And while we're talking about wrestling, how about our friend Steve Slykowski covering the Pixies For Orange Cassidy. What a crossover.
It seemed like it was made for you and Blake.
Yes, we have had a long standing thing of that group, Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor and Trent. Three guys known as best friends, that's what they call themselves in wrestling, and the gateway to them becoming our close friends. Blake is in contact with Chuck all the time because Chuck's a basketball fan. If you're a basketball fan, you eventually find Blake at some point or the other. And now Steve doing the entrance music for Orange Cassidy. We're getting ever closer to hanging out with best friends.
We're getting there. I got to hug Blake on the weekend, which
huge.
One of the best moments of the last 16 months, for sure.
That's huge. I also hugged Blake recently, and it was also a huge highlight for me. Anything on the old tube you want to get to or mention?
No. Yeah. We haven't really watched anything.
Yeah.
We're rewatching Scrubs, which is fun. Ted Lasso premiere was great. That's all.
I also, yeah, listen, a little bit of Olympics, a little bit of this and that. We were away most of the time, but want to give a shout out, Bob Odenkirk. Hopefully.
Yeah, apparently just tweeted that he is going to be, or Nate Odenkirk just tweeted that he's going to be okay.
Wow.
Which is, I'm not one for like celebrity death being a thing, but that one would have real sucked.
Yeah, just yesterday I was seeing his, he posted like, Men's Health posted his like workout routine. For how he got into shape for nobody.
I forgot he got into shape for that.
And it's like, for me, seeing somebody like Bob Odenkirk do a workout routine, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's not...
right?
That's not crazy. He's doing pull-ups and sit-ups and boxing and then a ton of crunches. Did you see Nobody? I really want
to
see it.
No, I would like to, though, because I love Odenkirk and I love those kind... I love the genre Wick, if you will.
Very good.
I'm a big fan of all those.
And my wife mentions we saw Jurassic Park at a drive-in on the weekend.
Oh, that's fun. How was the drive-in?
It was pretty good. My wife had never been to a drive-in before, which I guess, like my small town of 6,000 people, we had a drive-in. So I saw a very large percentage of the movies I saw as a child. I saw them at the drive-in. I was more likely to see a movie at a drive-in than I was at a theater because our theater only had one screen and only played one movie at a time. Whereas a drive-in, you got a double bill or an all-nighter. So I also had a lot of firsts in my life at drive-ins without saying too much.
That's good to hear.
We move on to the mailbag. First question coming from It Looks Real, our good friend Flube. Which Olympic sport would be best served with professional wrestling style presentation?
Ooh.
Because they almost sort of do. Well, they like for swimming, they come out. They have a little walkway. They come out. I think we could see more preening in the weightlifting because it's big beefy folks.
Yeah,
when they just get out and they lift and then they leave.
I would like to see it in track. I see them. You have a whole track to work with.
That's true.
You could walk around the whole thing and take your time and you're like with music blaring. That'd look good. I don't think it's needed in like skateboarding because it's already a pretty like preeny kind of sport.
Mm-hmm. I will say the women's skateboarding is the best vibe I've ever seen at an Olympic event.
Oh, man. I actually did watch that. I did enjoy that immensely.
It's just like teenage girls just hanging out and having a really fun time and like also throwing down sick tricks. It's like, oh, they're just there vibing, having the time of their lives. Seems so cool.
How could you not?
Absolutely right. 13-year-olds taking home gold and silver. Unbelievable.
Look, it's good that the kids are... There's hope for the kids and not for...
No, us. You know, we don't want a 35-year-old being the best skateboarder in the world. That's no fun. It's no good. Evan S. Asks us, what's one feature/amenity/concession from other stadiums, any sport, you would like to see implemented at the Dome for Blue Jays games? I would like the home team to play there. That's my first big...
two days. I mean, the easy answer is local beer selection, sure. I think, which we've said, everyone has said a million times, so I feel it's kind of a boring. You know what? This is maybe a... And I don't know if this actually exists at every ballpark, but I for like such a big selling point of Rogers Center, at least when we were kids, was the Jumbotron.
Yes.
Like, half the building can't see it. Gotta have, like, make a way for everyone to see the big screen is the thing. I feel like that's a feature I would like to see. I don't know how you implement that, and I don't know if that's a thing in all parks.
Yeah. I have a couple of times said to myself, or not myself, but when asked about the ballpark features, I really think a history of the team needs to be on display somewhere. It needs to feel more like something that they don't do as good a job as they could. They're doing better and better. We'll give credit to the current front office. They've done a better job. Is sort of making it feel like the Blue Jays' home versus like a building the Jays happen to play in. You know what I mean?
That's a great point, especially because it's like you can make the argument that, like, you know, ACC splits between two teams and whatever. But like the Jays have just been, like, I know the Argos were there, but like Skydome and the Raptors for a minute, but like Skydome is the Jays' home. It should. I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, a little bit of history, a little more stuff. Like that is the direction that I would go. Because listen, there's only so much you can do with sight lines and things like that.
Yeah. And short of rebuilding the whole thing and putting it on the water, which is the dream. Let's make a BMO for baseball. BMO's so good.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yankees pushing hard to try and acquire Gallo or Gallo type. Boo. He's going to go to the Yankees. I'm going to be so mad. Prairie Jays, what's one weird thing you like on your hot dogs, Jake?
You know what? I don't really have an answer to this. I'm a boring hot dog guy. My hot dogs are just mustard and hot sauce, and that's it. I don't do anything on hot dogs. My wife, however, has a weird hot dog taste.
Let's hear it.
What?
It's a good hot dog.
She's yelling, it's a good hot dog. My wife's hot dog is mayonnaise, cheese, and pickles.
Whew, that is different.
It is. Different is the right word. Different is exactly how I would describe it.
That
is a different hot dog.
Very different. Wow. Listen, it's been a long time for me since I've had a Toronto street dog, because as you well know, Jake, a hot dog in the Toronto street is different than were I to make a hot dog at home. Toppings
absolutely
completely
correct.
Different. I'm you know, corn relish is a classic Toronto hot dog thing. There was a stand near City Hall at one point that had crispy onions as an option. So like crispy onions, corn relish, mustard, and a pickle sounds pretty okay to me.
Yeah,
maybe it's not weird. I don't know what constitutes weird, you know.
Yeah, it's true. I'm team crispy onions at all times. Doesn't matter what the food is.
Have to agree. I feel like you had crispy onions as an answer to, like, what's the one food you would so-and-so.
I think I did, too, and I think I was correct.
Shanna Planner.
What, for us?
What would your nicknames be in the NBA, NHL, and MLB?
See, the thing is, this is a cop-out answer because I don't have an answer. But we can't answer this question. You can't give yourself a nickname.
Right. And in hockey, I would have to be Zoo B.
Right, because you're already an Ur.
Right. So Ur has become E's.
I guess I'd be Jaker, I guess.
Yeah. And then I would guess that NBA. The NBA I would probably get. Like, they would call me, like, Bald Mamba or something, right? Like, you'd have to get, like, a sort of how they call, you know, Caruso the White Mamba and, what was it, Scalabrine was the Red Mamba? You sort of have to get a name based on the fact that I'm a bald white guy.
Bald white guy, yeah. I would not have a nickname in the NBA because I am short and bad at basketball.
Sure. And MLB, I think, listen, MLB people are not creative, so it probably be Zoobs, to be totally frank. People forget that Zoobs is not my name, so that counts as a nickname.
Yeah, I think likewise, maybe it'd just be Golds, or just straight up my last name. Goldsby.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, Goldie. Who knows?
Goldie, yeah.
Or maybe they do something funny, like they call you like Silver, you know what I mean?
Classic
how they call clever, it Don Cherry Grapes.
Clever bunch.
James Nielsen, when you create characters in a game, do you make him look like you or how you wish you looked, or do you go off the board and create a wild character?
Depends on my mood, I would say. Oftentimes, I don't even bother. It's just, let's get right to it.
Mm.
And it's just the default setting. I care more about, like, I change up the name. I make sure, like, the name and the physical attributes match up.
Okay.
To me. Because I like being, you know, I like going into the show as, like, a 5'5" guy and making it and being dope.
Absolutely. I generally do the lookalike, although I know that I should do silly. Listen, when you're bald with a beard, like, my look is in every single video game ever.
That's true. Bald white guy with a beard. Yeah, you're never going to have a problem.
Super easy. Throw a pair of glasses on. Looks just like you. Like, yeah.
I would also say I don't usually go silly. If I'm going to take the effort to do anything, it's not. I don't like the silly so much for that kind of thing. I don't know why.
Yeah, and keep in mind, you know, I already am look just like an athlete, so. The game, I'm default model number one almost every time in the games. Last question. This comes from Josh. In honor of episode 200, how do you think your co-host, this is for each of us, how do you think your co-host has grown since you started the show?
I mean, I feel like we probably both cry a lot less.
Maybe that's true. Well, listen, you have come a very long way in accepting who you are, and there were things that you used to run from that you now fully embrace.
Mm.
That I think is very vital, and you have allowed yourself to love another person as much, if not more, than you love yourself. You have made that commitment. You have found a person that accepts you for all that you are, and you accept them for all that they are, and that has allowed you to grow greatly. And not only that, in terms of your interpersonal relationships, your awareness and your action on things around you in your community, in society, things that do not affect you, you still have strong stances on and believe fully in and speak out on, and use the platform as large or small as it may be. You use it as often as you can for good. And I think that is something that when we started this, maybe you would quote tweet people that didn't like the Blue Jays. But the idea that you would be regularly rallying for disenfranchised, for folks that are different than you, not that you were ever against it, but just sort of the fearlessness with which you approach those things, I think is a definable growth and something that is enviable.
Well, thank you. I would say similarly with you, I've noticed that you're the ever radicalization of Zoobs over the last few years has been very nice to see. Not that, again, not likewise, not that you were ever, you know, a right-wing guy, but you weren't someone who I thought would, especially in the last year, I would say, you've really grown into not only giving a fuck, but loudly giving a fuck, which I think is good, and not taking perhaps some, I'm not sure what the right term is. I want to say guff, but that's the wrong word. But you just you put up with a lot less bullshit than I think you used to, especially professionally. I've noticed that you seem to understand your value as a person and as a worker now, rather than letting other people dictate it for you, which I think is a good thing, and definitely different than when we started doing this. And also just in terms of your own, like, taking care of your own self, like your ability last year to be like, I'm sort of spiraling, I should probably go to therapy, and then doing it and actually, like, taking the steps forward to heal yourself, so to speak, and to not get so bogged down by, you know, the demons and the problems. Not that they ever go away or anything, but just your commitment to actually being proactive about that and not letting it sort of beat you every now and then, I think I have noticed a change in the last year when it comes to that in you. And I think that's a very good thing, and a very good thing going forward as well.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. To another 200 episodes. I mean, sitting here in 2025, because I'm being realistic, we're going to start missing. The J's become bad again, then we're out of here. Anyway, that is it for the mailbag number 200. We are going to quickly answer the question for the 200th time. whether we are sad or not sad, for another week after this. And we close things out for the 200th time, whether we are sad or not sad, for another week. I will go first, something I talked about last week. This weekend, my wife's family, the old Kudo gang, we had a good old-fashioned Portuguese backyard party. More than 30 of our friends of my wife's side of the family were together to get her... basically the bridal shower she never got to have, as well as a celebration of our marriage. It was so nice to see the tios and the tias and the nieces and the nephews to drink all day and to eat the same meal for 9 hours straight. Really something, really just a special weekend. And I got to go into the work office for the first time in more than 14 months, because I was working freelance up through October of 2019. So almost 2 years, my first time working in an office. Like I said, we went to the drive-in. Again, ate one meal for like 9 hours straight, drank a whole bunch, homemade red wine, champagne, beers, and just got to see family and dance and laugh and, you know, cook sardines on a charcoal grill while it's raining. Just a really fun, lovely time, and a ton of love in the air, and really just so nice to be able to get back together with family and friends and toast to my darling wife. And we're still sort of in the process of figuring out what quote-unquote wedding is going to mean. I'm not sure you understand the same thing. We're almost in the situation of like, are we going to have three different things where we have one wedding for one family? We don't. That's not what you want, right? The whole idea of a wedding is everybody comes together.
You do one, and then you're done.
That's right.
That's the whole point.
So we'll figure that out. I still get that question a lot, and we don't have an answer yet. But it was nice to do the bridal shower that my wife deserved to finally have, and to do it on our 14-month, 7-day anniversary. Very meaningful. And I said a speech midway through the day and nailed it pretty good. So. That's, you know, a pinnacle point in a grown man's life is the first time he completely wasted gives a speech at a event in his honor. I felt pretty darn good.
You got into the wine a little bit this weekend. It was nice to see.
For the first time in a very long time, probably since 10 Claw Night, did I wake up not knowing who I had messaged the night before. And it wasn't much, but I messaged Josh from Wrestling Brain. I don't even like 10:15. I messaged him about sardines, and I was like, I don't remember that conversation at all. So hasn't, again, only happened a couple times in the last little bit. 10 Claw Night would be the last one, but you never saw off in a nice little steam off.
I like it. That's good to see.
Jake, this week, are you sad or not sad?
I'm going to go not sad as well. Catching up on the last couple weeks, I would say just like doing stuff and seeing people has been such a lift that I didn't expect. A couple weeks ago, we went to Georgetown to visit a couple of our friends who moved there, which was a lovely time. And then we had a bachelor party for a very small outdoor bachelor party, I will reinforce. For our friend of the show, Christopher Lund, and then got the pleasure of attending the ceremony portion of his wedding this weekend. And just like seeing people and drinking beers has been very nice and very, you know, I feel like we talk about it a lot over the pandemic of like, oh, I can't wait till we can see everyone. It's going to be so nice. And, turns out we were right. It's very nice.
Yes, absolutely right. Good old Chris Lund. What are they? They just had a wedding in front of people. Come on.
They had a wedding for with the bridal parties and groom parties, and then they had a dinner and speeches just with immediate family.
Beautiful.
And so we just went for the ceremony and left, but it was lovely to be involved at all.
I love that.
That's what I will say.
I love that. Beautiful. Nothing like love in the air, huh? And seeing old friends and having a toast. Truly great. And then Lundy, who we love, immediately going on to a cottage. Smooth play.
Yeah.
Very smooth
play. Oh, yeah. Right away. Just time to pound back some Miller Lights is what he'll be doing.
Love that for him. And love that for you. Very thrilling. And not too long from now, Jake, it'll be you and I reuniting, having a hug.
It's true. That's true. I can't wait.
I think sometime in August we're gonna shuttle our asses back into the city.
I feel like it's time.
We will see. We will see what comes of it. But that is it for another week. For 200 episodes, unbelievably incredible. If 200 episodes is not enough for you, you say, I need more Sportsfeld. Patreon.com/Sportsfeld. You get lookbacks every single week to old events that happened before we had a show or when we didn't have a show in between our shows. You get mailbags, extra mailbag questions. And every Monday, Blue Monday, exclusive Blue Jays content, and I'm probably going to do one Saturday morning because I sort of am going to want to immediately react to the Blue Jays deadline, and I'm going to do Saturday morning because I might just get drunk on Friday if they don't do enough and become terrible.
Or if they do,
maybe I'll get drunk anyway. But either way, expect Blue Monday on the weekend. That is patreon.com/Sportsfeld. That is it for another week. To everybody who has come along and listened to even a second of any of our 200 episodes, it means the absolute world to us that you would bring us into your lives. There are a trillion podcasts to pick from, and you somehow decided to listen to ours, and it absolutely means the world. Thank you all so much from the bottom of our hearts, and from the 200th time, thank you so much for listening to Sportsfeld.